Thank you. It is my privilege today to talk to you about Zombie Takeout, what it is and why. Welcome to episode 289 of Zombie Takeout.
Zombie Takeout.
The B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, just want to talk a little bit about Ghostbusters, because I had a chance to see it last night.
I saw it over the weekend myself.
Oh, good, good. We hadn't talked about that part before the show.
No.
I really liked it.
You know what? I was surprised myself, too. It's very reverential towards the original.
Yeah, there maybe are a few too many references, but not obnoxiously so. It's just, okay, maybe that's enough. It's but, like that one too many.
I think the main difference between it and the original was that this was more... This went into it knowing it was a family movie.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Where the original actually had, like, you know, jokes about calling someone dickless.
Exactly, and... yeah, yeah.
They were softening up their stuff, you know, from Caddyshack and Stripes and whatnot.
But they weren't quite there yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was surprised. It's one of the few roles I've liked Melissa McCarthy in.
You know, I think it's the first movie I've actually seen her in.
I've seen her in a few things. She was in Gilmore Girls, which is the only other role I've liked her in. What's her name? Kate McMillan, though, stole it. Holtzman.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Holtzman is one of my favorite characters in fiction now.
And Leslie Jones was good, too.
Oh, yeah, she was really good.
The power of Patty compels you.
Yeah, don't trust the trailers.
<It's> hilarious.
Given the nature of the movie, it doesn't work in pieces. It kind of only works as a whole.
You know, I'd never actually seen the trailers, which maybe, I mean...
The power of Patty compels you gag, it really looks horrible in the trailer. But
oh,
it works
really
well in the movie.
They used that in the trailer, huh?
Yeah. They kind of cut up that scene a little bit, and it looked horrible. But
it worked really well. Cut up. I mean, the whole point is she's, you know.
Yeah. Kristen Wiig is basically the straight person, plays it perfectly.
Yeah. She's playing the Shelley Long part pretty much.
Pretty much, basically, yeah. And Chris Hemsworth is another one who stole the movie. I didn't know he could go buffoon like that.
Yeah, he had a lot of fun doing that to me.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say it's on par with the original.
Well, you know, people romanticize
the original. I gave it a revisit a few years ago and yeah, it's still good, but it doesn't hold up to my memory.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but the whole argument that, and we talked about this off air last week, Ghostbusters is not a pristine franchise this came
not
out
at all.
By any stretch of the imagination. No. I mean, the sequel was so ham-fisted, despite, you know, Viggo, the, you know, genocidal maniac, which is great.
Right.
The Carpathian, you know, hasty.
And was it Peter McNichol? He was awesome. Perfect for the role.
But the cartoon actually called themselves
the real Ghostbusters,
which was an implication that the ones in the movie were not real.
Right.
That's not a pristine franchise. So to be like, oh my God, I can't believe they're rebooting something. By the way, I mean, Star Trek, what's it like? It's 12th movie. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm going to go see it and everything, but that's a reboot. Yeah. They're rebooting Ben fucking her.
Okay, and I'm sure there's a Spider-Man reboot a couple years away.
We're like a couple years overdue for a Spider-Man, the rate they've been coming out. Mm. So it's the way of the world reboots.
Right. So anyway, long story short, it's good. If you're at all interested, check it out. I would give it a 4.
Same here. It's a family movie, so don't go in expecting you know, raunch comedy. It's not even PG-13 comedy. And don't expect a body count. There were you know, some of the people online complaining about it wasn't like didn't go enough into the horror side. It's like, wait,
it's
what
comedy
do you think you're watching, man? Yeah.
I think this actually was a bit scarier than the original. With some of those early ghosts.
The original had
a little bit, yeah. But the bit in the mansion was legit, at the beginning was legit scary. And there were a few spots here and there.
It's comparable to like the library scene at the beginning of the original, I think.
Right, exactly.
Just the technology's better now.
Fair point.
The weird part, and of course, you know, the whole feminism debate that this movie just blew up around it. They literally fight the symbols of patriarchy.
And the main villain, actually one of my few criticisms, the main villain is kind of cardboard, but he is exactly the kind of asshole who was trashing the movie without seeing it just because it was an all-female cast.
I wish they had gotten like Patton Oswalt to play him. But he's the body type. He might have, you know, gotten a few more laughs out of it.
Right. The only real downside, I mean, again, cardboard villain, but you don't really care about the villain. That's not the point.
He's in it very little. Right. I mean, but you do want to. I mean, a villain is something you should really take advantage of having. You know,
if they had a good villain, it would have been a 4.5/5.
Think so, too. I agree. That's the only thing I was missing.
The only really cringeworthy spot, and it's like a second, is Ozzy's cameo. All of the surviving Ghostbusters have cameos. They're really good, especially Murray.
Yeah, not sure how Ozzy fits in.
Yeah, the only other cameo that I could pick out was Ozzy, and it was a second of a line of involving Sharon, you know, the typical Ozzy shout. It's just annoying.
Well, Annie Potts had her.
Oh, yeah, the surviving Ghostbusters. I'm counting her as the original cast.
The theater really popped for all of them, really. Mm-hmm. Although people miss the Harold Ramis cameos.
Well, because he's no longer with us.
I pointed out to Mrs. Scotto while we're watching it, like, the bust outside the...
Oh!
Outside her office was Harold Ramis.
Next time I have a chance to see it, I have to look for that.
And then someone had said, I didn't even notice this, but someone pointed out that the bobbleheads at the cut rate university that they were working in...
That's perfect.
...were Harold Ramis bobblehead dolls.
Nice, nice.
In the community college gift shop or technical school or whatever it was.
Yeah. Anyway, like I said, we both give it a 4. Check it out.
Yeah.
On to this week's movie, which is from 2015, Anomalisa. This finishes up our two-part tribute to the work of Charlie Kaufman. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Middle Age. Where the fuck did the last 20 years go?
And also brought to you by actors. When making a movie, for fuck's sake, maybe you don't need them.
Not many of them, anyway.
Yeah, we all do. All right, so where do I begin? Oh, go on and wring my neck like when a rag gets wet. A little discipline for my pet genius. My head is like lettuce. Go on, dig your thumbs in. I cannot stop giving. I'm 50-something?
You're only you.
Yeah, oh. Midlife grace.
That's basically the movie.
Yes. So we have, it's tough to give some of this away because there was, you know, the first half hour, I was kind of like, what the fuck is going on here? Because this guy is just living this dreary life. Mm-hmm. He's depressed. Everybody sounds the same to him. It took me maybe a
sounds
couple
and
seconds.
Looks.
It took me a few seconds to realize that it was all the same dude
doing
all the other voices because he has a different voice.
Well, the voice I noticed, but it took me a while to notice everybody had the same face.
Yeah, that too. And just, right, everybody sounded the same because everybody's voiced by the same dude. Mm-hmm. Women, children.
There are literally three actors in the movie. David Thewlis and Jennifer Jason Leigh play the leads. Tom Noonan is actually credited as everyone else.
And he just, he's doing his thing. Mm-hmm. He's all by himself. He calls, that's when it was kind of like, wait, what's going on when he calls home? Mm-hmm. Like, because first, you hear the taxi driver who has a New York accent in the middle of Ohio. well, not middle of Ohio, southeast Ohio. You have southeast? No, south Ohio.
I'm not sure. In Ohio, that's about all I know.
Yeah, near that Kentucky border, some, you know. Yeah, so then you have the taxi driver, you have the passenger next to him, the bellhop, and the guy at the hotel desk. The voices, you know, have some different tones to them, but it's the same dude.
Right.
But it's a while before you figure out that it's the same dude.
Doesn't stick out until he calls his wife and son.
Like, when he's reading the letter from his ex, and it's the same voice, you almost think it's like his voice that's doing it, maybe, right. You know? Like, oh, he's just reading it in his own voice. That's kind of odd. Okay, whatever. Yeah, it's not until he calls his wife and both the wife and the child have the same voice that you're like, what the fuck is happening here? You know, and I'm not, I was kind of wondering if I was going to be able to get into this because, and why they would make this choice of casting everybody in the same voice. And then his face falls off.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah. Well, right. He has a shower. You see a little too much of the puppet.
Mm.
And then his face falls off.
Well, he has an affair in the meantime.
There's, oh yeah, that's right. I forgot. He went to see his ex.
Mm.
But they didn't actually have an affair.
Well, no, she stormed off on him, and then he found he's he wrote a book about customer service. He's a customer service expert. Is that a thing?
Hey, I don't know.
so he meets a fan, and he has an affair with her.
Well, wait a minute. I think are you skipping ahead a bit?
Well, yeah, I'm basically just getting to the meat of the movie because he gets the face falling off was at the end. It was after he had the affair in the dream.
Oh. It was kind of when it first... he goes, he meets his ex. And he's trying to angle to get her to the hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
At first you're kind of like, oh, maybe he's trying to be, you know, just find something. But then you realize it's just a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he meets his fans. But what prompted him to meet his fans was the glitch in the Matrix when pretty much the whole movie just changes and goes from one to the other.
Well, no, he heard a voice that was different.
Right.
Which took me a minute to get. Because he's getting out of the shower and he says, someone's here. Which didn't make sense to me because I thought he meant in his room and there was no one else in the room. But then I connected, oh, he heard a voice that was different, that wasn't Tom Noonan's.
Well, exactly, because I was so thrown off by dealing with all of these similar voices myself. Once I heard a separate voice, I knew that's what he was reacting to, too.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he just launches into the hallway. He has to find this other voice, knocking on doors, the same dude answering back no matter where he goes, until he actually finds her. And he has an affair with her, and...
Then he has a dream where his face falls off and everybody wants to sleep with him.
Yeah, his face kind of started falling off when he heard the voice, too.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Like, there was definitely, like, a glitch in the Matrix kind of thing. Where, like, his face kind of convulsed and very weirdly and pretty much opened up at the line.
Okay.
But yeah, he has this dream where, like... it's not just a single voice, it's a single entity, and it's all just smothering him, and then he wakes up, and I'd like to say hilarity ensued, but it's...
It's a Charlie Kaufman movie.
Yeah, it's kind of rough.
Well, it's actually the other Charlie Kaufman movie, which is why this is a two-parter, and I'm definitely sensing a theme that we don't get in the stuff that he just writes. Because the stuff he just writes is definitely more on the comedic side.
Yeah.
Now, at the very beginning, we have these overlapping voices, all Tom Noonan, of course.
It's very Dark Side of the Moon.
Exactly what I was just going to say. It felt very Pink Floyd.
Well, because it's that repetitive laughter, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all you expect is, I didn't know I was really drunk at the time. That,
yeah, the end of the funny. Yeah.
What is madness?
Now, this was actually written in 2005, which they give you a hint at toward the end. And when he starts losing it, he starts ranting and he mentions the Bush administration.
Yeah, which didn't make any sense.
Well, he's not supposed to make sense there. Anyway, it was written for the L.A. run of the Theater of the New Ear, described as a concert for music and text, or a set of sound plays by Carter Burwell, who commissioned and scored them. It was credited to the pen name Francis Fregoli, also the name of the hotel in the movie. It's a reference to the Fregoli delusion, a belief that different people are in fact a single person who changes appearances or is in disguise.
Oh, wow.
Which is another thing that the movie plays into, which is why everybody has the same face and voice. The 2005 performance had Thewlis and Lee sitting on opposite sides of the stage, with Noonan sitting in the middle. The only other people there were Burwell, who was conducting the orchestra, and a Foley artist.
So I guess the first question is, did this need to be animated, or does that lend to the...
I definitely think, as opposed to live action, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, it definitely helps. I don't think the everyone having the same face and voice thing would have played live action. I think way better either in puppets like this or in animation.
It worked in being John Malkovich.
True. But it worked as a gag. It's not a gag in this, you know? I just think it would have been off-putting in live action, personally.
I mean, it's kind of off-putting here that, yeah, everyone with the same voice.
Well, it's supposed to be off-putting in that sense, but it would have taken you out of the movie, I think, in live action.
Then just when I thought I was going to be out of it, Jennifer Jason Leigh shows up, and then it's like, what the fuck is happening now?
I think another reason that it's better that it was puppets is the sex scene would have definitely landed it in NC-17 if it was live action.
I don't think they would have gone there if they had humans, though. You know, yeah,
good point.
They were doing that shit because they had puppets, and they must have been big fans of Team America. Although the sex scene was quite shorter in this movie than Team America, wasn't
and
it?
I think a bit more graphic.
The Team America,
or maybe it wasn't as graphic as Team America, but it seemed more realistic. Like, it's been ages since I've seen Team America.
They like pissed on each other.
Okay, it's much more realistic, I should say, more so than graphic.
It's really fucking funny, the sex scene in Team America.
I think also because the sculpt of the puppets is very realistic. It seems more explicit.
That's true. It's scarily realistic at a lot of points.
Especially the sound effects.
Yeah.
I had to run that back to make sure I heard what I thought I heard. But also with reference to the puppets, the subtlety of movement was really amazing.
Yeah.
Because they don't play like puppets. They don't look like puppets except for the lines in the faces, which were a bit disturbing. So
well,
the faces
could move.
The great
Malkovich was probably a crucial part of putting this movie together puppeteer.
Yeah. But the lines in the face were a little off-putting, a little disturbing. I think the lead should have been wearing glasses to cover them, just so you weren't, you know, at least so I wasn't staring at them, because I have a tendency to stare at the lines.
Well, I mean, weren't they intentionally there? I mean, they didn't have to have those lines there.
Oh, I thought they were there so that the parts of the faces could move.
Yeah.
You know, to give them freedom of movement. I don't know why they would have been there otherwise.
I mean... Because it's kind of a looking at humanity from the outside in.
Okay, interesting. I did think that everyone being the same bit did seem a little heavy-handed, particularly when he was on the phone with his wife and son.
That was confusing. And then it made perfect sense as soon as, you know, Jennifer Jason Leigh came in.
Mm. Okay, so you didn't get what they were saying until she showed up.
Yeah, until they put in the different voice, then it was like, oh... Because, I mean, cinematically, since it's began, they've always tried to convey, you know, love or attraction.
Right.
You know, they've used musicals, they've done, you know, where someone's singing how they feel or whatnot, or Shakespeare had his soliloquies. This kind of puts it's like a great demonstration of it, where everything is just blended together, but there's just something about this one person that just... like made him go crazy.
That's an interesting interpretation, because to me the everyone being looking the same thing was an illustration of either a midlife crisis or possibly depression.
Well, yeah, I think
he just had enough. He was at his breaking point.
I think it is that, and towards the end, you reveal that it there wasn't anything different about her, really.
Mm. Yeah,
it is just him
mm-hmm.
and what he's hearing.
And the face that they used was interesting because it was really androgynous. It worked either as male or female. It didn't seem odd in either case.
Right.
Now, I have to nitpick a little bit of the logic. How could he walk into an adult toy store with lingerie in the window?
It took way too long for her to figure out.
And not realize it was an adult toy store.
Toys they were selling at yeah. the toy store.
Yeah.
I mean, he practically, you know, tripped on the penis.
He did seem a little drunk in that scene, so maybe that was it.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. You
know, but he was standing at the window for a good 30 seconds looking at all this lingerie.
True, true.
Kind of tells you what kind of story it is. And I've also never seen anatomically correct puppets before this. And they are completely anatomically correct, at least on the outside.
Yeah.
You see him get out of the shower, and like I said, there is a full frontal and backle, as they say.
They wouldn't have even done that if there were humans involved.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That was clearly a Team America.
Now, you mentioned, did it need to be live action, or did it need to be puppets? Kaufman was initially opposed to turning the play into an animated film, saying that the play had a disconnect between what's being said and what the audience is seeing. There's Tom playing all these characters. There's Jennifer and David having sex while they're just standing on the across the stage from each other, moaning. And he said you'd lose that. The film was reinvented, although the script was described by The Guardian as virtually the same as the play.
Now, I mean, could it be if it's just the voice that's the same and everybody looks different? I mean, would that have worked?
No, I don't think that would have been big enough. I think you needed to go bigger. They needed to look the same because it does really get across how tired of everything he is.
Yeah.
It's all just the same.
Like, yeah, because people, when they're talking about Cincinnati, they all talk about the same damn thing.
Mm.
And I don't know about you, but that chili, I just, no. God damn, no.
It sounds like it could be interesting, but...
Why would you put spaghetti on it? What the fuck?
Is the spaghetti on the chili, or is it the other way around?
I believe it's on the chili.
How does that work? Because, I mean, if the chili was on the spaghetti, I could see that working.
It's weird, whatever it is.
I don't know. Deep dish seems weird to me. I mean, we won't get into that, but... shouldn't be called... I'm sure it's good, but it shouldn't be called pizza.
Well, it's a pie.
I mean,
Sicilian.
Well, yeah, form, okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, the... I don't know. I think I see it kind of done both ways, where the chili's on the spaghetti, and mm-hmm. sometimes the spaghetti's on the chili. It's really weird.
Anyway. Now, at the end, he does kind of turn into Basil Exposition a little bit. Much like the priest in Synecdoche. He just kind of explains the point of the movie.
Hmm. I don't know. I don't know if he actually explained the point. He explained why he, you know, feels the way he does.
Well, he says, you know, everybody has their own story. Everybody's had a day. Everybody's unique.
Hmm.
And here he is seeing everybody the same. It just kind of seemed to me to be kind of putting a pin in the point of the movie.
That's kind of a contrast, then. I hadn't thought of that. Like, yeah, he's talking about treating everybody as individuals,
mm-hmm.
yet he doesn't see people as individuals.
Right.
Hmm.
It kind of, like, just summed the movie up. And you know, and maybe, you know, some people did need that, like you needed it in Synecdoche.
But I don't know if it actually sums the movie up, really.
Well, it sums up the point. Which is, you know, he's sleepwalking through life, and he's, you know, turned his back on his principles effectively.
I mean, I usually don't read other reviews before or after seeing before the episode mm-hmm. that we were recording right. here, but I kind of had to take a look to see.
I actually haven't this time. I didn't really
know what other people felt of this,
uh-huh.
and really, there's so many different possibilities.
Yeah, that's the beauty of a Capman movie.
As to what happened here. Someone brought up purgatory again, too, that the guy's either in hell or purgatory, just kind of suffering this, you know.
Which that explanation tends to bore me.
Yeah, I don't see it in this one as much as I did last week.
Yeah, yeah. The last week, I think it's valid. This time, no.
Because the last week, you know, they actually talked about death a lot more in that one than this one.
Right.
Some people just think he just lost his fucking mind. that Lisa didn't even exist.
Yeah, it's a good possibility.
That Lisa... there's one theory, and I think it was on The Guardian, that the sex doll was actually Lisa.
Oh. Well, he didn't buy the sex doll. He bought the Japanese thing. It wasn't fully functioning.
Right. And they noted that when they were running it, at the end,
something came out that wouldn't have come out if it had been used a long time prior, right?
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
But they believe that was actually Lisa all along because she kind of appeared after he bought the doll.
That's a good point. Yeah, because that was right after the fight with his ex.
Yeah. So who knows? The other criticism of this film is they believe, there's some people online that believe that he raped Lisa. Which was like, what?
Yeah, I don't really see that.
I don't either. I think that's really nutty.
The thing with the Japanese sex doll, so to speak, makes a lot of sense given that line at the end that I really didn't think about as much as I should have.
Yeah, I hadn't either. And then I saw that, like, wow, okay. That could be very true. That he just finally lost it. And that, you know, it explains why he went to the, you know, speaking engagement and he was just nuts.
Right.
He's really lost it.
He actually did have a breakdown on stage. And there's a line about something about the war, the Gulf War, something that happened during the Bush administration.
Yes.
That I don't remember exactly what the line was, but
I think they kept it in because it just made him sound crazier.
Yeah, it just really dated the movie, which is why I said that about 2005. He also digs up the old trope, there's someone out there for everyone. That's not mathematically possible.
Are you saying there's an odd number of people on Earth?
Well, I just don't think it works that way. I don't think the numbers quite work that way, given, you know, everybody's possible orientation and the number of men to women and yada yada.
And even if there is an odd number of people, there could be multiple people for one person.
Yeah, this is fair. This is fair.
Triad. Yeah. Triad, you know, we're not.
I'm just really tired of the whole someone out there for everyone thing. It annoys me. I did think the line where he says, look for what is special, was really nicely ironic.
I think that's always a good word to live by, actually.
Oh, yeah, but in this movie, it was nicely ironic.
Yeah. Also, back to whether he had raped Lisa or not, some people believe that, actually, I'd say the majority believe that he took advantage of her.
Well, she was a fan, and she was possibly a little drunk when they got together. So, yeah, I can see that. There are definitely moral implications.
But
plus the fact that he was having an affair.
She knew that the possibility was it was going to be for just that night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, like, the really shitty part is, of course, the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, because he's could be fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Or he was just so desperate to find something to latch onto that wasn't his everyday drone. Which is how I read it up until that ending where he just completely lost his shit.
The problem, of course, is him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's kind of another point of the movie is nobody else caused the problem. You know,
right.
It's all in his head, so to speak.
Right.
It's either a mental illness or it's just a severe midlife crisis.
I mean, of course, all these people most likely do not sound alike.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to his ear, to his perception, they do. And somehow she broke through it.
Yeah, which gets to Fregoli's delusion.
And really, it's, you know, she broke through it because of who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's not, you know, trying to put on some sort of air.
Mm-hmm. She just is who she is.
Yeah.
One last bit of trivia, a little bit of nitpicking. There is no Japanese word that means goddess of heaven that sounds like Anomalisa. he called her Anomalisa because Lisa's her name and she's kind of an anomaly. At the end of the movie, she says she found out that it actually is Japanese for goddess of heaven. Not true. She could have been referring to Amaterasu, which is Japanese for goddess of the sun. So I just wanted to nitpick that.
That kind of translates.
Well, yeah, it has a similar meaning, but
because
Amaterasu does not sound like Anomalisa. That's the difference. They do have a similar meaning.
But yeah, right. Because I mean, if you're looking at like the celestial, worship, the sun would be
In the heavens, right? Yeah. They do have similar meanings, but they don't sound enough alike to really make it work. On to sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes.
No.
Yeah.
There's no room for a sequel. He pretty much has a straight up breakdown. He was probably institutionalized shortly after the movie.
Well, it depends on how long he can put the face on it, you know?
Well, I was getting the impression that he was in the last stages of the breakdown.
Yeah.
And so there's really nowhere to go with the sequel. And a remake of a Charlie Kaufman movie just shouldn't happen. Same thing as Synecdoche.
Although it would be kind of interesting to see someone try to pull off a live-action version of this.
I don't think having the same actor play everybody visually would work.
Well, maybe they don't have to do that. I mean, there's some reworking they could do of it. But I guess it is the same principle of being John Malkovich, of, the guy in his own head, only he's in somebody else's head.
Yeah, fair point. On to brains.
On to brains.
I have nothing in my notes. I'm completely off the cuff here. I'm still pondering. I can't really find a flaw. I don't think it's quite a 5. I'm going to go 4.5.
I think I'm right there with you. Man, it's so much to take in. But it's harder to follow. Even though it's like a half an hour shorter than Synecdoche. I got to go 4.5 as well. It's just, it's amazing to look at, and just the story itself is it's hard. It's rough to take in, but it's worth the ride.
And what have you learned?
We learned that, I think I've said all the stuff I've learned, actually. I didn't know I was really drunk at the time.
And I learned that reading Let Me Help You Help Them by Michael Stone will bring up productivity by 90%.
90%. Isn't it weird that they kept coming back to that stat? Yeah.
Well, I think the only other time it was mentioned was in the dream.
Oh, yeah.
Lisa mentions it, and then in the dream, the hotel manager, before things get properly weird.
If you take it at face value. Wait, actually, how strange would this be if that was reality? Crazy, if that was the actual reality, and they do this as kind of the Matrix.
Everything else was the dream.
Yeah.
Oh, my. All right, so in 3 days, this is going to be fun. When we'll be reviewing Sharknado 4. Yeah, we're going to watch it Sunday night, get on Skype right afterwards, review it. I'm going to have the episode out by morning. This is going to be a wild ride.
Yeah.
I'm already pulling lines and the clip, obviously, at the end from the trailer, because I won't be able to pull it from the movie. This will be interesting.
This is kind of like a Bill Maher level of... why are we doing this to ourselves?
We thought about doing this last year, but it didn't quite pan out. So we're going to try it this year. And if this is not a stunt we do more than once. Much like 3 movies in 1 episode.
I mean, Mars, of course, in a couple weeks. But what I'm talking about is he'll do like his show and then go off and do some stand-up gig right after his show. I don't know why he does it to himself. He's kind of a little crazy, I think.
All right, so until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Also, if you enjoy the show, spread the word. Give us a little word of mouth. Of course, we appreciate all the listeners we have, but more would be better. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review up through, well, Dressed to Kill is the placeholder, so I think it's like 304, 305, something like that. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And, of course, the recommendations list. It's a Kaufman movie. I was sure it was going to make the rec list.
I wasn't so sure the first half hour.
I have faith in Kaufman.
Yeah, it's very similar to Synecdoche.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely has some midlife crisis issues to work
through. Or, like, the first half hour, you're just like, what the fuck? What is going on here? How is this going to be a movie? Mm. And then he just completely takes this turn.
Right. You can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged.
They can puppet fuck themselves.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you'll always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
Oh, it was an honor spending time with you.
Spaghetti on it. What the fuck?
Is it on, or is the chili on the pudding? Or I'll take that again. There's my outtake.